Hello and welcome to a series ending edition of the Warriors All 82 podcast. Tim Kawakami with me right now. Marcus Thompson will join us.
The standard MT delay, but people have grown used to and appreciate that. It's just me and Slater to start, then comes the heavy stuff.
Why do you think his stories are so much better than everybody else's?
There you go. He doesn't race over and cut it short to get make sure he's on time for this podcast. Because people ask me, like, how come I always got to wait for Marcus? I go, just fast forward to his part then. You don't have to listen to me and Slater if you don't want to.
So they win 120-110. They complete pretty easy 4-1 series over the Mavericks. I mean, this was an easier series than the Memphis series. A Memphis series they didn't have Ja Morant for three games. A little bit surprising. I think the game two was the big swing game where, you know, Dallas hits 21 threes. Warriors still find a way to win that game. But at the same time, like, the swing game in Memphis is game one where, you know, the Ja layup at the buzzer, basically. And that goes the Warriors' way, but they still get, you know, had to fight tooth and nail to, like, barely pull it out in game six. I think looking back at it now, I mean, maybe we can criticize Phoenix, and maybe Phoenix would have been just as easy. But I think
I think
the Warriors were fortunate that it was Dallas waiting for them in the West Finals.
Yep, no question. And especially coming off that Memphis series, which was so physically tough and so mentally, you know, they're going back and forth, you know, in the media, and there's guys getting hurt. And, you know, just the physicality of that team, the speed of that team, so much more uncomfortable, I think, to play in Memphis than it is for them to play in Dallas. It's going to be very hard for Dallas to win a game here. It was hard. They almost did, but even then they couldn't. And if the Warriors played half decently, it was going to be very hard. And we saw it tonight. You know, maybe Luka's a little worn down, but that happens when you're carrying the entire offense yourself. Maybe some of the other guys were just ready to, you know, at some point get hit the golf course and hit the beaches. But the Warriors were just a better team here. Like, you have to beat them here. If they're going to win one there, which they do every series and which they did in Dallas in game three, then you have to beat them here. And they're very good at home. This is not the rowdiest place in the world, but this is a place where they're very comfortable, and they're very comfortable that they will be able to pull it out in the third or fourth quarters. And tonight it didn't even really take that much, but they showcased that they were a better team than Dallas, and specifically a tougher team than Dallas.
9-0 now at Chase Center in the playoffs. To me, this was kind of Klay Thompson again, second straight elimination game, or at least closeout game, I should say. That to me, his early jumpers just kind of eased everything. I think he finished with 32 on 12 of 25 in the closeout Memphis game. He had 30 on, I don't know, it was like 14 of 22 or something like that. He's going to need to be more consistent against Boston, and we're calling it Boston. Draymond Green's already saying it's Boston. Everyone.
I tried to throw it out there to Kerr, and Kerr would not bite on it. I just said a team that might be a lot bigger than you, and he said, "Well, first we got to see who it is."
Did you see Klay Thompson was walking out of the press conference room talking to somebody, and he was like, "You coming to Boston? Get some clam chowder. You coming?" And I'm like, and I was like, already calling it.
Yeah. I did hear that, and they're up 3-2, and they got a home game. Leads have been kicked away in lesser situations, but it's probably going to be Boston. Boston's huge. Anyway, the Warriors will have home court advantage over either team, and that, again, when you're undefeated at home in the postseason and you have home court advantage in the finals, and you have won a road game in 26 consecutive playoff series, whatever the match part, looks pretty good. I mean, the situation is that it looks pretty good for the Warriors. We can all point to some of their weaknesses or some of their vulnerabilities, but this is a situation where this is playing out for them. And maybe Dallas in the Western Conference was a chance, you know, another moment that it played out pretty well for them.
It seemed to me that you wrote about the big situation. I don't know.
I said I was going to write about that. I didn't really write about that. But I do believe, like, the mix and match, and like they don't feel like they should be dominating these games on the glass. Yet they keep, when they won again the boards tonight, they've won like quite consistently throughout the season, and even more in the playoffs.
You know, they have the two best offensive rebounders in the playoffs, Andrew Wiggins and Kevon Looney.
Yeah, Wiggins with 10 rebounds tonight, Looney with 18. This is backing up Looney's 22 in the clincher against Memphis. This is real stuff. Like, I think they're not you know, physically going to be able to keep up with Boston or Robert Williams and Al Horford, but I mean, maybe. I mean, Tatum is, like, at this point, how can you say otherwise? I kind of thought about writing that, and I ended up writing Draymond's emotion, and Draymond, you know, yelling, "We back, we back." He was running through the corridors yelling, "We back, we back," and just what that signifies, what that means, why he's the person who gets the trophy, why they enjoy him so much, what this whole season has meant. So I wrote a lot of different things. So Slater's calling me out on what I said I was going to write and kind of wandered away from. But I started with Draymond, who is indeed in the front line and will be massively important in the next series. If it is, certainly if it's Boston, because they just have a million guys you have to guard. And he's going to have to get one of them for sure. Like, you're going to have to be able to say one of those guys Draymond's guarding, and we don't have to worry about him so much. I'm not sure who it'll be, and I don't know how it's going to be set up. But that is going to be a very tricky strategic matchup for the Warriors.
Also, he's going to have to score, and he has been scoring. This is now 5 out of the last 6 games. He's 10-plus, and that's always such a magic number for them, right? I mean, he doesn't have to score 20. He never does it anymore, but 10 means he was a threat. 10 means he took what was there at times. Tonight he hits a corner three. I think he ended with maybe 14 or so.
3-and-1s too. Like, he was getting
power and one
to the rim, foul, and getting it over that front rim, which does not always happen. You know, it's the Celtics. It's not the Celtics. I mean, it's some, you know, lesser people he's going through, but that's important for him to feel good offensively, be hitting some outside shots, taking some outside shots. Changes everything for them. I don't know what the stat is. Like, when he scores 10 points, though, I mean, it's very hard for him to be beat. When he scores 10 and Klay scores 30 or close to 30, they are practically impossible to beat.
Yeah, look, Klay's offense to me just, like, takes them to a different stratosphere. And what I was saying earlier is, like, he just, to me, he can't be as inconsistent as he's been against this level up of competition that we're expecting them to face in the finals. You know,
they're playing, we all know that Dallas had played good defense to finish the season, obviously played good defense a lot of the time in the first two rounds. Boston is a whole other thing, and Miami too. Like, either one, that this is going to be a defense that's going to turn the Warriors over, and it's going to force them to do things they don't want to do. Dallas could do it for stretches, but not for entire games. This is going to be really interesting. But, you know what, listen, the Warriors, they know all this, they've said all this. But they're allowed to celebrate for a couple of days, and the fan base is allowed to celebrate. This is a monumental achievement to get back here after what we saw in a disintegration, after we saw it, you know, in June 2019. They are rightfully proud to be here. You know, not satisfied, but a little satisfied, right? A little satisfied. There was a sense of that, like a conclusion, like not conclusion, but a completion of a, like, this team could have gone away after June 2019, really could have, and they are back, and that's what Draymond was screaming. We back, and they are.
Yeah, before we get to maybe some of the bigger picture thoughts, maybe wait on Marcus for that. You know, you didn't write about it, but let's talk a little bit about the big man situation beyond Draymond, who, again, obviously had a good series. Kevon Looney has, like, made a ton of money in these playoffs. I mean,
still a little bit curious. Like, he's played great before in the playoffs and become a free agent and not got money. Now, you think he's got to get money now, right? He's got to.
Well,
see.
I would say, look, he signed, what was it, like 3 years, 15, with a player option on the third year a couple seasons ago, and by the middle of that contract, you thought he's might not get another contract in the league. He couldn't stay healthy. It was like, obviously he had the early career hip surgeries, but remember the neuropathy went through, the core surgery he needed. He had to, like, overhaul his diet. He could not stay on the court, and you wondered, you know, when this contract's done, not only, like, would the Warriors probably give up on him, is why they drafted James Wiseman, part of the reason, but all you know, you just wondered if he would just last in the league. And now, I mean, the Warriors getting him back on the mid-level would feel like a steal for them. He's and, like, James Wiseman, you know, involvement in next season or not, like, Kevon Looney probably again is going to enter the season as a starting center if they could bring him back. And not only enter, next season, he's now entering the finals where, to me, it was wild. By the middle of this series, like, I no longer had daily questions about the starting lineup, right? You weren't sitting there like, you know, who are they going to put in that fifth floating spot? It no longer became a floating spot. Like, Kevon Looney is the fifth starter, and it would not make any sense to even change that at all.
No, and they didn't. And, you know, I think if they would have, it would have been Otto Porter, frankly, right? Not Jordan Poole. They're just kind of committed to staying a little bit bigger and it has worked for them. And Looney's been incredible. I mean, the two closeout games, he's just amazing, you know, and that means something. I was actually kind of thinking of this story. Like, is he good now? Like, is this like not just Looney, you know, interesting? Is he actually like, we're looking at Al Horford and Robert Williams. If that's who, and I go, these are good players. Williams is hurt a lot, but he's a good player. Horford is playing ridiculously in the playoffs. Like, he's an outstanding player. I was thinking, isn't Looney like doing a similar stuff? Like, except for hitting threes. It's like, that's what he's doing. He is defending everybody. Nope, Luka is not getting past
you
him.
A few funny things from a crowd perspective. Tonight, did you hear all the Loon chants after every rebound? That's not what he usually gets. You very rarely, and maybe you had a couple fans saying it, but like, it was like a full throttle, like, Loon every time he was doing anything.
Crowd favorite. Come on, Looney.
I mean, to me, like, he has really elevated the reputation in these playoffs.
He's deserved to. I mean, it's not just the defense, it's the rebound. Like, when you pull down this amount of rebounds in the postseason, it really matters, especially on this team. You know, lacking size, playing small at times, or a lot of times. You put those numbers up, you're that physical. He's getting these offensive rebounds. The offensive rebounds he got, these two of them back-to-back, and then he shovels it out. Was that to Clay for the three?
No, it's Bjelica.
Who I wanted to get to. This is the stuff that wins you fans, obviously. It doesn't have to be with just the threes. This is huge stuff.
Second fan thing with Looney. There was a Dallas fan back in, this would have been game three, behind the scorers table, that, you know, Looney was playing well and Dwight Powell was not, and, you know, Dallas didn't have a center.
Playing the series. I can barely remember him in this series.
But some Dallas fan was like, why can't we get a center like Looney? And I'm sitting there, number one, I'm like, I think you can, just spend a little money this summer. But also, I'm like, you know, did anyone see where this was going from a center perspective this playoffs? And Marcus has joined us, but I mean, the fact that, you know, obviously, the storylines entering the playoffs was like, you know, how will they hold up? Basically, without a traditional center. Looney, 6'9", came in the league not being a center. And to the point that Dallas' fans are begging their front office to get a center like Kevon Looney. It's just interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's especially funny considering during the dynasty, they always had like five of them, right? They kept a center. Steve doesn't like not having centers. As a matter of fact, they might have won another title if he wasn't so addicted to centers, right?
Which title?
The 2016, when they kept putting the fences of Zeke and Aaron
Oh, wow. He's really going hard with this one.
So it's just, you know, Steve's bent on having a big man in there. It was always just weird. Like, what are they going to do? They never got one. They were content not to get one. They obviously thought they were getting Wiseman.
They kept drafting them. Damon Jones and Jordan Bell and all that stuff. But they had Looney the whole time.
Yeah, but so I thought this postseason would come down to how well Draymond holds up a center. But it turns out, you don't need him to, because Kevon Chamberlooney has entered the chat.
Well, so fantastic in game six, obviously, the 22 rebound story of that game. Again tonight, which we mentioned earlier, he was really good again. But to me, the forgotten game in this just Looney renaissance is game two. Draymond was really bad that night, almost got tossed a few times, gets five fouls, ends up fouling out, actually, in that game. And Looney, they were better with Looney on the floor, and that's to what you
did it tonight, though. They pulled Draymond early, like 6 minute mark.
That was to get Looney, or to get Draymond with the second unit, because the second unit had struggled so much in the last game without Porter.
You can do that. Yeah. You know, you can do that, because it's like, okay, four guards with Looney. You know, that's fine now. Looney's the guy. And listen, like, he had a couple of old school Looney finishes in this game. But still, like, down the stretch, he's like putting his shoulder into people, pump faking, going up hard. Like, this dude is like, yo.
Tim said before you got here, he was like, is Kevon Looney good now? Like, he's good. Like, he's just a good center. He's not just like classic Looney.
We have to like shift everything. It's not like, Looney is good now. It's like this small, great lineup. The whole thing was, yeah, Looney out of the starting lineup. You're going to start Jordan Poole, and there's your best five. It's like, Looney is your best five now. It's like, he's in your best five. It's amazing. It has happened. I declare it. It has happened.
At a time in a career that is abnormal for it to happen, right? Usually, but at this point, you just kind of know who a player is, but no, he's like elevated who he is.
Draymond said it, like, yeah, like Jordan's gotten better this year, Looney's gotten better this year, and he's right. You don't normally hear it said like that, but he has gotten better. Like, through the year, he's gotten better, and he is playing by far the best basketball of his career in these playoffs. Like, not even close. So, full credit to him, man. Full credit to him. And they are really, really, really going to need him in the next round. Really going to need him. But we'll be on to the next round.
All right. Marcus, what'd you write about?
I wrote about how Steph, Clay, and Draymond are basically unbeatable when they play together, when they're healthy. And, man, I'm just going through it. It's been a long time. It's been a lot of teams, right? There are very few teams that can claim beating that they beat them when they're healthy on the court together. And to me, this was like their defining playoff run, right? The one that takes away any talk about it being a fluke or any talk about it being because of injuries or whatever.
Or Kevin Durant,
right? So for them to do it now while they're older with a completely new different cast around them, there's no question these three are the center of the championship core. Like, that's undeniable at this point because they did it again against the odds and after 2 years and after injuries and all that. So I just felt like this was the time to talk about it. Like, these dudes don't lose, man. And I know people have used all of this stuff, all of the things that happen in losing, as a way to kind of diminish them. But the truth is, if you beat them, that's a boon to your legacy, right? That's how good they are. They're so hard to beat that if you pull it off, like LeBron did it, and he became instant solidified. Now you're talking about him as one of the greatest of all time. Whoever beats them next, they will be, you know, remembered because
of it. Let's just theoretically say Boston beats them in the finals. That is will feel much weightier for Boston than absolutely if they beat Dallas.
Or yeah. Phoenix even, right? Yeah, or even for Phoenix. You're right. But, you know, good to go along with what MT saying a little bit of what I wrote, as I continue to say, I wrote about a lot of different things today. But it's, as Steph started talking about, like, their real satisfaction is that they're bringing in these other players from other systems, and they're getting – they win with the Warriors. Like, they get better with the Warriors. Wiggins, you know, you can just go to Bielitsa tonight, you know. Otto Porter. Like, they become winners when they join the Warriors. Jordan Poole, as a rookie, develops into a winning player. That is further testament to the legacy of Steph, Clay, and Draymond, I believe. And maybe their lasting one. I think that's the lasting one of this season. If they win the championship this season, it's not just about those three maintaining their level and continuing to be winning players. It's that just being around them and the culture they set up, and Steve Kerr is a big part of this, makes these other players better. And it's hard to say that about a lot of other groups like this. It has happened at times, I'm sure, Showtime Lakers or whatever. I mean, the other great seasons. But this really has been this season, because Clay's taken time to come back. Draymond hasn't been healthy the whole time. Steph hasn't been healthy the whole time. They're not the same players they were, certainly not in 2015, 2017, 2018. But they are making everyone else rise to their level to become a version of Sean Livingston or Andre Iguodala or these other great players who are part of it. And that is such a tribute to those three guys.
Yeah, that he just wrote my column, so we're good.
I wrote a lot of different columns tonight.
Did you happen to write about, like, the stability of Steph Curry?
No, I did not. That one I left aside. I played that to the side, but I just loved that the moment where Draymond's, you know, got the trophy and screaming, and his teammates, you could tell they loved it. They loved two things, right? Steph getting the MVP, which I hope you wrote about, Slater. They were going crazy over him getting that trophy. I think, did Steph say, I got one, like one MVP trophy? I think that's what
somebody slipped a joke to him that Ernie Johnson was trying to get him to say publicly, but he wouldn't.
I think he said that I got one. I think that means, like, you finally got a trophy. But also the moment where Draymond's screaming and we back and
Clay running. Too. Clay almost cried up there. So I'd say
it just was very emotional, and they've been through it a lot, but you could tell that I just wrote that it was different and a little more profound. It was like deeper feeling to this. Like, the first one, you know, incredibly emotional. Look, we're here. Kerr talked about it, like, you know, oh my God, we're here. But they were all so much younger. And the second, third, like, they all were emotional. But this one was more like people have lived lives. people have lost and won and suffered and triumphed and become richer and become parents, all these things was all in that moment. So again, I'm writing my own column, which I've already filed. I'm speaking about it better than I wrote, but I felt there was a lot of power in that. Just where they are looking back, where they're back. They still got to win four games. So here's a question. They lose. Were we talking anything like this at the end of it at all about the season?
Yeah, I mean, look, it won't be like the stuff of legend if they lose the finals, but I think them winning the West at their current ages, considering what the past two seasons were, which was worst team in basketball, the pandemic hit, which I think people just, you know, it's kind of forgotten within the last couple of seasons, but that just made everything just seem so, just worldwide seem so much more fragile, including just like, I don't know, just their, I guess, longevity, whatever you want to call it. And then, you know, even last season, like, the fact that they couldn't even get in the playoffs, and there were so many moments, particularly throughout the season with you know, the Wiseman situation, the Oubre, and just, like, how they couldn't seem to rediscover themselves.
They all brought up 15-5, though. It's, like, yeah. Such a huge thing for them that they started figuring it out by going 15-5 to end last season, lost the play-in games, but they went 15-5, and they knew they had Klay coming back. And that really kind of changed the idea and the vision. I think they had this, or just the reality of what they could do last offseason. They just felt like they could do it. And they weren't sure about it, but they felt like it.
We'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsors.
So much has gone into, like, you know, getting back to the mountaintop, which obviously Klay had to come back. Draymond had to play the type of defense that he has all season. Andrew Wiggins had to, you know, first of all, Bob Myers had to make the trade for Andrew Wiggins. Andrew Wiggins had to be this type of defender, which, you know, we haven't even talked about him, but he was awesome on Luka Doncic all series.
So 40 minutes a game, go play,
yeah.
Luka.
Joe Lacob's spending is very much influential, crucial within all this, but to Steve Kerr's coaching too, but just Steph Curry's willingness to stick this out, number one. And they, you know, I have a quote that's in the story of just from Kerr just talking about, like, you know, there are a lot of stars in the league when you hit 15-50, when you don't make the playoffs the second season, when you're sitting there, you know, kind of staring at a questionable late prime, and when you see your organization has three lottery picks and they don't use any of those
teenagers. Yeah.
They don't use any of those lottery picks to help the current core. They use it on the future, you know, guys that they want to be very good when you're gone. That there's a lot of major players in the league that would grumble, that would have used, you know, his contract situation, as we all can remember, he didn't have to extend. That could have been a leverage into a power play. Didn't do that. Kept everyone together, kept this situation together, because I think at any point, like, if he pulls a plug, everybody pulls it. Like, it turns into the next era. And also his coachability, his defense, the way, you know, he has become a better like, his best defensive season is his 13th season. I mean, I thought he was very good defensively this series. And then the conditioning. Jason Kidd mentioned it in his one of his press conferences this series, like, the best conditioned athlete in the league. I think Jason Kidd is a little bit talking to Luka within that. Yeah. But, you know, we're seeing it with stars across the league. You know, and the deeper the playoffs go, they wear down, they fade. Steph Curry, again, in year 13, is the best conditioned athlete in the league, according to Jason Kidd. Like, that's why they're in the finals. That's professionalism. That's work. That's coachability. That's just everything from Steph.
Yeah, that's been... That was the case in the Houston series back in the day, right? Where Steph is like, I'm built for this, which is a clear message. He didn't believe them other dudes had the conditioning to survive. Even, I think he told Reggie Miller, but Reggie Miller said it, like, there's a confidence knowing that you're the best conditioned athlete out there.
More conditioned than James Harden? I don't know about that. I don't know.
Definitely more than Eric Gordon, though, right?
Definitely more than Andrew Wiggins. Right?
Yeah, I know, right? Andrew Wiggins is one of them dudes. I think that's why he fits. But there is the crazy part about Steph is the other thing that makes him really unique is that all of this stuff he's doing, like, he could just be like, I'm not doing that because he's Steph Curry, but he does it right from not complaining about being the fifth highest paid player on the team. Remember that? To like, trying hard on defense, right? Like really trying to get after it and trying to feel the weaknesses in his game. Like, this is why people come and play for him. Like, this is why they come to be with him. This is why Andrew Wiggins is smiling like that, right? And why Andre Iguodala is like, I'm ready to retire, but let me get one more run with Steph, because people just love playing with that dude because of this stuff.
Yeah, well, one example I put in my story, like, they jacked his rotation pattern up this season. And, I mean, in retrospect, we know, like, he didn't like it. You know, it was months on months where Steve Kerr wanted to, you know, limit their exposure in those. Like, he didn't want the six-minute non-Curry for a while. He wanted to kind of see if that would help. And also, he just wanted to experiment. Remember, a lot of the season was about different rotation combinations, getting him with Jordan Poole more, different stuff like that. But he just did it. And as you said, like, a lot of stars wouldn't do it. And it's just these small examples time over time. The one of the quotes Kerr had to me was just like, he's never had a moment where it's been hard to coach Steph Curry. I mean, there are other players on this roster, I think we all know, very good players on this roster, who there are times when Steve Kerr, you know, what did he – remember that? Remember when he was caught lip syncing a few years ago with Draymond? I'm so tired of Draymond. He wouldn't, you know, like, that's what.
And that was years ago, yeah, too, by the way. So possibly might have been more tired as years go by.
But it's like, he probably has had that thought about pretty much every single person on this roster, in this organization. Forget just players, you know, bosses of his. But there's just, I mean, I felt like a genuine quote to me. Like, I'd never once, like, not enjoyed every single moment of coaching Steph Curry, which, like, that says a lot.
I mean, it's the greatest gift he got as a head coach, right? Is to get that dude. Even when – I remember when – remember they all lobbied for Mark Jackson to come back and they didn't get him. And, you know, you thought, hey, man, Steph was, like, basically saying, do not fire my coach. And they fired him. And I'm like, oh, man, this might be it. Next thing you know, Steph is, like, golfing with Steve Kerr. Like, I'm going to give him a shot, man. I'm going to see what he, you know, I'm going to hear him out first at least, right? That disposition is kind of like been the biggest boon for Steve Kerr. Did he forget about Steph
on the championship parade?
Remember Steve had to, didn't he call you or who? Yeah, he called one of you. Mark, he called you because didn't Margo say, like, you better get it?
Well, and also they signed Kevin Durant. Like, you know, he's like, fine, let's sign. Like, what other superstar would say, fine, sign somebody who's going to make more than me and, you know, be an incredibly dominant player, and we're going to have to change the way we play. Like, that's all those things. And by the way, that's why Kevin wanted to come here, because no other superstar would be able to fit with him like that. And maybe we're seeing that in Brooklyn right now. It's just, like, really... Yeah, historically, it's going to go down as it's such a unique superstar for a lot of different reasons. But that part, I think, that the you know, it's Tim Duncan and him. Like, Steve always brings up Tim Duncan, but Tim isn't going to get the same kind of discussion because it was San Antonio, and he doesn't talk as much.
It's Tim Duncan. If Tim Duncan was like an global icon. You know,
and played differently. Steph has that, the way he plays too is just so different, perimeter player. But that's the only other one I can compare it to. Just how it happens that Kerr, you know, played with Tim Duncan and is coaching Steph Curry. It's not similar to Michael Jordan. It's not similar to LeBron James. It's not similar to, like, a lot of different people we can mention of that skill level. That's what's so unique about all of this. But yeah, I mean, it's a great. I mean, in his 13th season, this is like, it's the same as it was like in his second season. That's so unique.
Well, and in some ways, again, better. Like, the conditioning and the defense. Yep. Like, yep. He's built now, and I mean, like they kind of didn't really target him as much. Like, no. They tried to get him in a bunch of screen action. Yeah. But he just handled it better. There was, remember how many, like, pick and pop situations with Bullock that they were trying to run him through? And just, to me, just the way he absorbs it and then goes on the other end.
The teams have another player they can really target. So, like, that kind of changed it, too. Because Poole is still, you know, he's an issue defensively. But you can get through it if they play this well offensively and the other guys are this good on defense. You know, and you got to figure out a scheme for it. But still, Jordan Poole is an issue on defense. And it will be for the next series.
Marcus, were you surprised at how easy Dallas went down?
No, not at all. I mean, I thought they were tired anyway. And Like, Luka started the game driving. The shot wasn't going, so he was driving.
I don't even just mean tonight. I mean, like, in the series. Like,
I thought it was going to be a longer series because I thought they would get hot. I thought they would be hot for both Dallas games and take both games. But they also have a willing – you know, they look like they were willing to get beat at some of those games. And like Reggie Bullock and Kleber didn't shoot for game three, right? They just could not make a bucket. I did not think that was going to happen this series. I thought I thought because of the way they went through Phoenix, they're going to win most or all their home games just because they did against Phoenix, and that did not happen. So I am surprised it was this easy.
I wasn't, especially after game one. I feel like once I saw that Dallas had to make a lot of threes, like it's tough to beat the Warriors that way. You got to have a counter. And I don't think they really had a good one. Plus, I mean, like, no shade, but, like, they're just not losing to Reggie Bullock and Dorian Finney-Smith. Like, that's not, you know, I mean, they're just not, those dudes just aren't scary in that sense. They're good players, right? And Luka's incredible. But if you throw stuff at Luka, now you're like, who's the guy that's beating you? I mean, the problem with the Warriors is, they didn't have a Klay. They didn't have a Jordan Poole. Like, you know, you got, even with Steph, you got to have that other guy. Their other guy just wasn't that scary.
Well, it was Brunson, and he did not have a great series.
Yeah, but he's not. Yeah. I mean, he's a good player, but
he's the only
he's
guy.
He's not that, taking down the Warriors.
He's the only other guy who could have done it. He's the only other guy who could have done it. And, you know, he kind of took down the Suns. But the Los Warriors put Draymond on him, and it kind of made it tough for him. He couldn't, like, just dig his way into the lane. He wasn't even trying against Draymond. And, again, that's also the greatness of Draymond. So, I'm surprised. I just thought, like, game three to me was the whole thing. Like, the Warriors just took it to him in game three. They just took it to him, and they were never going to recover from that. Dallas had to win game two when they could have done it here, and then they had to put up a much bigger fight in game three and didn't.
The truth is, you just got to be able to counter with the Warriors. You cannot do one thing. You got to have a counter. They're going to take away something. They've got too much versatility and too much, like, experience, especially now. But we've seen it with all the great teams. We've seen it with Houston. We've seen it with Cleveland. We've seen it in Oklahoma City. If you don't have a counter, you will not beat the Warriors. And I just don't think Dallas had a counter. And Memphis had one, actually. It was take Ja out, right?
Yeah. Well, if I was, like, reconfiguring, like, the West landscape for next season, and as, again, what I think we've learned all season, like, the Warriors are going to be in the conversation the next few years. Memphis is now, after seeing both these series, like, to me, sticks out as a much bigger threat than Dallas.
No question. Like, no question. To me, that was very odd. Memphis is elite in the West.
I thought they were a bigger threat to the Warriors for the middle of the season than Phoenix was, even though I thought Phoenix was great. Just the way they match up and the way they've beaten the Warriors in the past. And they, you know, we clearly saw the way they beat the Warriors in game five. Like, that, there aren't a lot of teams that have that in them. Like, who has that in them? Boston and Miami didn't beat the Warriors like that this year. Memphis did a couple times, including by 39 points in the playoffs. So they are, you know, they make one more move, and it doesn't have to be a big move. They could be, like, a screaming threat for the Warriors. They already are a threat. And I don't know that another team, I don't know what Phoenix is going to do. I don't know. Memphis is the threat to me. And Memphis was the toughest series. And if they had lost Game 6, the Warriors were going to lose Game 7. I don't think they would even argue with that. So that's the big series. But I think Boston is going to be very similar, if not better, than Memphis. So it will take everything the Warriors. Now, Boston is going to be exhausted. The Warriors are going to get a couple more, well, at least one more day of rest. So we'll have to see how that plays out. Tatum's shoulder isn't great. But I think Boston is a really, really difficult team for the Warriors.
All right, last subject. What was your favorite post-game scene that you saw? Take me something unique that you saw, because it was, you know, it was kind of lively down here.
Jeez, that.
I mentioned the one I wrote about. I just think Draymond on the podium screaming and then running down. I think I was standing next to Slater when he was running down. And were you there? He was fist bumping everybody. Yeah. I did fist bump him because he went right up to me, so I fist bumped him. If anybody has that on video, that happened because he was offering a fist bump and he was happy. And like there are moments you see real emotion, and he was just so happy to have gotten through this, to get to the next round. And that's the moment I thought really projected to me what this series and what this playoff run has come to mean is that emotion of, like, they've gone through 2 years and they were not happy for 2 years. They didn't have to get back here, and they're back here, and they were just watching Draymond scream it out on the podium.
I saw Jordan Poole. He was on the phone on the bench. I didn't write about this, but he's on the phone on the bench. Like, all the players are going back into the locker room. He had come out. I think he was talking to his mom, and he was talking to his family, and he was just really hyped. He was excited. Then he's walking back to the locker room, and he's got his guy filming the whole thing. So he sees this woman in a t-shirt that had a Michigan shirt that had Poole on the back. He was like, "You got to get her. You got to get her." So he goes. She was going into the Bridge Club. He goes and he, like, takes a picture with her and films her, and she's, like, on the verge of tears. She's like, "Jordan Poole." Apparently she's been following him since Michigan, but he was just hyped to see somebody with Jordan Poole. But he's bouncing around. It was his first time, you know. It was a first timer getting a taste of finals glory. It was a cool moment watching Jordan Poole go through that.
I grabbed Joe Lacob quickly because I just wanted to get a Steph quote out of him. And he you know, gave me a Steph quote. It's in the story. But as I'm sitting there getting it briefly, Chet Holmgren and Bill Duffy walk up. Chet Holmgren, you know, the likely number one, number two, number three overall pick in this upcoming draft. Bill Duffy, I assume, probably is who he's signing with, yeah, or has signed with agent-wise. But, you know, Bill Duffy's, like, introducing Chet Holmgren to Joe Lacob. You know, Chet, he's like, you know, great, great venue, great, you know, this was awesome to see. You could tell he was kind of in awe of the whole situation. I saw pictures of Chet Holmgren and Dirk were out there, so he clearly met a bunch of people. But it was just funny. At one point, Chet Holmgren was like, "Ew, what about finals tickets?" He's like, he was trying to, like, ask Joe about Joe Lacob about finals tickets. I just thought it was funny. Joe kind of, like, ignored it and, like, you know, moved on, but... That was kind of a weird scene down here, and the Chet Holmgren aspect was interesting.
He is really tall. I mean, I know he's tall, but my God, is he tall. Like, he's humongous. Even in an NBA situation, you're seeing NBA players run by or whatever, and he's way taller than all of them. My God, is he tall.
Yeah, for sure. All right, we will talk to you next week, probably a fuller, like, Warriors plus minus type episode previewing either Warriors Celtics or Warriors Heat still on the table.
I'm still pulling for it. I'm not calling it anymore, but Miami would be nice. Miami would be nice. That's all I got to say.
Any chance it's Warriors Heat?
Any chance? Yeah.
Percentage chance, I should say. Not any percentage chance.
Give me a solid 15% chance. Max Strus is going to get hot for one game, finally.
Kyle Lowry's
going to lose. Oladipo and Kyle Lowry are going to lose their minutes to Gabe Vincent, who's the only guard playing really well. Butler comes alive.
Gabe Vincent, who I saw hit 6 threes and take down Team USA, playing for Mike Brown and Team Nigeria in an exhibition this summer. He was, like, star of the game.
There you go.
So interesting. All right, we'll talk to you next week.